Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Fraser with The Real Podcast, and I'm excited to present part one of a two-part series with my man, Dawar Alimi, who is the CEO and founder of LenderPrice. Today, we're going to be talking about tech evolution and why you shouldn't be saying you're cloud if you were not designed for the cloud. Let's roll.
What's up, everyone? I want to welcome you to another episode of Lending Leaders with my man, Dawar. Dawar, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Just got back from vacation, so fired up.
Nice. You're ready to work, right? Vacation, like, you know, fantasy time's over. Now it's time to get back to the real world,
you
know, right?
What's so funny is, like, you go on vacation and, like, you get so excited. And then, which is weird for me, on the third day, because I took a week off, I just wanted to get back to work. And then, like, at the end, I didn't want it to end. I didn't want to go back to work.
Yeah. I sneak it. It's tough for me to go on vacation because it's tough for me to, like, just unplug myself.
Yeah.
And so I generally work during vacation, you know, just a small way. I try to, be present with the family, but, you know, sometimes I just, you know, I want to escape the work, but then as it's coming to close, then yeah, I have that same feeling. So that's kind of funny. This has been going great. Got a lot, you know, getting some great feedback on, you know, what you're talking about, with the last few sessions. So I love continuing this conversation and talk about this, especially today's topic, which I think is massively, massively important to discuss. Two things. One is, I want to get your take on kind of how you've seen the evolution of technology in our industry in general, right? It doesn't have to necessarily be about, your product, even though I think there, you know, should be talk about, you know, what you've learned and what you've seen and how your product has evolved as it relates to that. But secondary is a very important topic, and that's implementations. That is, you know, from a lending side, and I could also speak to this from being on the vendor side as well, but lending side, implementations are tricky, right? And there's a lot of reasons for it. But honestly, I'll tell you this. I think a lot of where things go south is on the lending side, is on the customer side for a lot of different reasons, which I'll get into and get, because I want to get your opinion on that as well. But I think it's important, right? Because look, if a lender is going to spend, you know, a lot of money on tech, right? Or any investment, really, especially in these markets, it has to be implemented correctly, right? Implementations are so key. And so I think it's a very important topic. But and I think beginning with kind of like technology and how you've seen it evolve, I think we'll go right into that as well. So I want to start there. So let's start with that question is, we've talked, you know, people have been listening. They understand that, like, you know, you've been in the business for a long time and in different roles, right? And so now that you're on the, you know, the solutions provider side of the fence, what have you, when technology, you know, we talked, you know, when, you know, we talked in the past about legacy tech and that it's, you know, at some point, look, it's just going to stop working, or, you know, and it's, look, it maybe hasn't stopped working, but it's definitely been less effective over the last, especially, you know, I'd say 3 years, especially, than what it was before. But what have you seen change wise in the evolution of technology in our industry the last 5 years?
Well, I mean, so if you look at technology and you look at a lot of platforms today, the legacy systems, I mean, they're, many of them were built in 2000, so old frameworks. And I'm going to put my engineering hat on, is like, you know, back then, like, you had the frameworks, the applications that you built were these monolithic applications, right? One big code block, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, that creates a lot of challenges. And you see a lot of, like, solutions today, and you see it in our pricing space, especially legacy, you know, pricing engines, where during the height of the refi boom, you had some solutions out there that were just down. And that's because of the monolithic architecture. Mm-hmm. Technology's changed where now you're seeing, like, applications being built in various, you know, architected, you know, in different ways, such as microservices architecture. Mm-hmm. So our application is is built on a microservices architecture. It's a cloud native application, and you hear a lot of these discussions about cloud native, cloud based, and cloud enabled. Really, what's nice about cloud native is that our solution, which was built, we founded the company in 2015, we started coding in 2016, is that when you have a microservices architecture, your application is actually built in small little microservices, mini applications. And what's nice about that is that you've got a lot of advantages. You've got scalability, resiliency. So like if a particular microservice or mini application is down, the entire application doesn't go down.
Yep.
So that's really important because, you know, we heard some horror stories like where you had lenders at the height of the mortgage boom where they couldn't lock. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that lock is part of a microservice, right? That can get rebooted. And then all of a sudden, you know, that service is back up. So technologies involved where now you've got solutions that are more resilient. It's built for the cloud. It's not like an application that was housed inside a data center that now has moved to the cloud, which is what you're seeing a lot of these legacy solutions do. And then they're saying, hey, we're cloud. Well, you're not really cloud. But look, you know, at the end of the day, I've always said that if there's an application out there that works for you and it functions and it does your job and it does the job that it should, then that's okay. But if you've got an application that you rely on, and I've always said that there's three applications in mortgages that are so crucial. You've got your loan origination system. You have to have it. That's your system of record. Your pricing engine, because you've got to manage your products, pricing, margin, et cetera. And then if you're going to service loans, a servicing solution. Mm-hmm. But having these applications transform into using a newer tech stack that embraces a microservices architecture is important because of the fact that you've got that, like I said, your resiliency, the fact that you can actually deploy code every other week. So you could have a 2-week sprint deployment cycle. So you could actually build your applications and features much faster than you could versus an old monolithic app.
Yeah. It's so funny you said that. I remember when cloud first started becoming the thing, a thing, and then everyone, all of a sudden everything was cloud. I'm like, and coming from an old, network engineer, no, what you're saying, your client server, you've always been client server. And now you're saying you're cloud, right? Like because it's generally at the time, no one really knew what it was. It's definitely, progressed and evolved since, cloud first, but it's funny because look, I see, and I know you do too, and we're not going to name them who they are, but like we see people saying, hey, yeah, we're a cloud service. And you know that their architecture is not truly cloud. It's more of the same of client server. It's, server centric architecture, but it's hosted externally. Therefore it's in the cloud. So like, it's funny seeing that,
You moved it from the data center onto AWS.
Exactly.
Versus like with us, we've got these, mini applications, microservices. And what's interesting is that these microservices use APIs to communicate and they use this communication protocol to interact with each other. So like when clients say, hey, can you, can you expose or, do you have an API that does this? Mm-hmm. Because it's an API driven app, we can expose that functionality very quickly.
Yeah.
Versus like the old applications, when they say they have an API, it's not the same thing. When we have all these different microservices, they interact via APIs.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah. And so like for those of you that maybe don't geek out as much as Dwar and I do about tech, let me make an analogy to you. And I use this for other reasons, or other scenarios, but this is when we're talking about microservices, and this kind of goes into also, I would relate it to something else, unfortunately, that is also a geeky term. And I know a lot of people aren't going to pick up on that either. Usually it's virtualization that I refer that to. But in this case, I'd refer it to a car and saying like, so your car's driving down the street, right? Or a freeway, whatever, what have you. If something happens to the car, generally, like you have to pull over and you stop everything. You stop your momentum, you stop your progress, right? What Dwar is talking about is when things are set up as microservices, generally you could fix something, but your progress doesn't complete. You don't have to completely stop the car, right? You could continue going down the freeway, continue on your journey and everything else while you fix another, a piece of the car without having to do it, right? The old way of doing, of that would be say, hey, like, got to stop the car, got to fix this, got to turn it off, got to disconnect all that stuff, reboot it, whatever. and then get back on your way. Whereas when everything is set up like Dwar is talking about, you are able to deal with certain issues or challenges or, you know, tech problems without taking down the entire stack, right?
Let me just add one more thing that's probably not geeky, but it's really important, is that although microservices sounds great, it's very expensive.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, you know, our server costs on AWS is astronomical. And then what you're seeing with a lot of these lenders and banks that have existed for a while is that hiring the tech talent, whether it's software engineers or DevOps engineers, to be able to, you know, build something like this becomes really expensive. So you've got the hosting that's expensive, because a monolithic app hosted on a cloud is much cheaper than a microservices architected app hosted on a cloud. And then also the tech talent. So that's why you're seeing a lot of banks and lenders that are looking at outsourcing, because they're saying, look, we don't have the tech talent to be able to build this properly. And it's much cheaper for us to outsource versus building it ourselves. So it really depends. Now, you do have some young, innovative companies or just innovative companies that can create that team. MasterCard, for example, did a phenomenal job where they had this skunk group on the side that they created that kind of said, look, your whole job is just to build applications and let's see how well you do it.
Yeah, it's one of those things to where in our industry, it's the future, right? Like, this is where all should hopefully, right, should be going to be engineered for that, because we are an industry stuck in legacy tech on all facets. So not just, look, you know, we could talk all day about, you know, the different vendors and lenders and stuff like that, and how they kind of hang on to the, you know, to the old stuff. But also some, you know, it's government agencies or, you know, and other things that we have to connect to and deal with, that their legacy and thus they can't handle new stuff. And I'll tell you, that's been, you know, someone that's ran tech at a mortgage lender, I could tell you, like, that's definitely one of my biggest annoyances, is when like, oh, we should update, we should do all that. I would love to, but like, unfortunately, we have to still connect to some legacy systems, and unfortunately they can't handle the new way.
And Jason, your background and your connections to the VC industries out there, now you know why they're investing in startups.
Yep. Totally. Right. Yeah. And this stuff I've talked about before, is that, like, I get approached by, you know, private equity hedge funds all the time for consulting, you know, just basically consulting requests to just, hey, we're looking about investing in this. Hey, we want to get your idea on where you see servicing or whatever, just to get, and look, I kind of stay in my lane of stuff that I, you know, and that I have more expertise and experience with. I'll tell them that. I'll be like, look, I don't really have any visibility into this side, but I could tell you what I'm seeing, and I could tell you what lenders are talking about, and yada, yada, yada. But I could tell you, you know, and this is something I tell loan officers all the time, is just like, hey, you know, your mentality of like everything's going to kind of stay the same is just wrong, because right now there is so much money and disruption that's being invested in things that I've seen that I can't talk about, but I'm going to tell you, it's going to, you know, right. You know, if you're doing a mechanical job right now, and look, you know, and it depends on how you're being used. If I'm going to be like, hey, a processor, underwriter, those types of things, that's operationally, that's some of the biggest costs that a lender has. And in this market, right, it's just kind of, it's kind of fast tracking AI and machine learning and other systems in the background that can do those things without needing a person. Right. And it doesn't mean that that role goes away completely or is extinct. What it means is that you have to be the cream of the crop, because you still need humans in those areas. But the thing is that unless you're an A number one, cream of the crop player, you know, it's going to be tough, right? And companies have looked, and this, you know, with this market and everything else, and with margins and everything else, is that, you know, they're looking at ways to cut those costs, and AI and machine learning is the future for that.
Yeah, and there it is, and there's some companies that are using AI. We use NLP, a lot of machine learning, our own proprietary algorithms, in a certain way. So, you know, it's also important to look and see, like, okay, it's AI is not AI with every single solution. You know, they might use a portion of, you know, machine learning algorithms to do certain things, you know, like document classification and whatnot. So,
Yeah. And then also in our industry, a lot of people like throw the term AI around, like it's AI. And I'm like, come on, guys, like that's not AI. It's, well, you programmed very well, right? You programmed, you know, request and response logic complete great, right? But it's not.
You know, what's pretty amazing to me is if you look at like what's happening with like, especially because we use, you know, NLP, but not to the extent that some other solutions out there use NLP, but use, and it's all based on this technology called GPT-3. So if anybody wants to look it up, look at GPT-3. But you're seeing a lot of, in, you know, marketing where you're able to write something, and then so these technologies will rewrite your entire paragraph, and then they'll, whether it's a blog post or anything like that, it's kind of crazy how the technology has advanced. I think Facebook just came out with something where, you know, you could ask it questions, kind of like a bot, uses GPT-3. It's pretty pretty interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of cool things are happening. But will it, how soon will it end, you know, will those type of solutions be available in the mortgage industry? I don't know, because the mortgage industry, mortgages are so freaking complex.
Yep.
You know, and it's not sexy.
Yeah.
You know,
it really isn't. But, and here's the thing I say all the time, especially when I, cause you know, I made this a post that, you know, went pretty viral a few days ago about, you know, mortgage vendors that don't suck. Right. And I named it like that for a reason, because I wanted people to read it and think about it. But, you know, when it comes down to what vendors are investing in and putting their spend in, a lot of it's just more of the same. Right. And it needs to evolve. It needs to go further. So, you know, one thing, you know, before we, you know, go into implementation, you know, from a technology standpoint, what, you know, how much time do you spend looking at, you know, the new stuff that's coming out, right? I mean, as far as like, again, just general tech, nothing to do with mortgage related, but like, what are, you know, what are you spending the most time on, you know, as you look for, hey, you know, like we're going to, cause I know you're definitely, you know, just the way I know LenderPrice is that it isn't like, hey, we made a great platform, let's kind of like stand pat and like, let it roll. Like a lot of other lenders or vendors do. Like, what are you spending time on, and how much of your focus is on where technology is going as a whole?
I mean, if you look at, you know, so innovation, looking at new ways to accomplish things, automation, workflow, new frameworks. We're constantly looking at ways, especially, you know, various frameworks that we can use that can provide a better user experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a portion of our budget that's always allocated to R&D.
Gotcha.
It's very important, because in order for you to stay ahead, you got to invest in R&D.
Yep.
So a good portion of our budget is focused on R&D, because you know, otherwise you're going to have your at some point you're going to be legacy if you don't do that.
Yep. Absolutely. And it has to be, it has to be important. What's funny is I've talked to a lot of vendors and I asked them about like R&D and stuff, and it's not a lot. Like they're not really, because I think our industry is so has always been, if it's not broke, don't fix it. That mentality, which again, I think is honestly like the biggest thing that has held everyone back in our industry. When you look at other verticals that have modernized or changed, ours is having such a hold on that. If it's not broke, don't fix it. And a majority of the vendors being so integrated with that and just doing more of the same and not doing innovation, like doing iterations, but which are important, but not true innovation. That has just been the biggest downfall of our industry, as far as not progressing the way other industries have, is that mindset. So I'm not surprised though.
But I think since 2000, especially since we were founded and we got in, I think you're seeing a lot more entrants, a lot more startups in this industry, because I think the VCs and private equities out there are looking at this industry and saying, look, it's a $1 trillion industry.
Yep.
And there's so much opportunity here.
Oh, there is.
The problem is that it's so complex and it's so highly regulated. That's the part that's tough, because it's the regulation. It's the fact that it's still, you know, it's so complicated, and we make it complicated.
Yep.
We make it complicated. We don't, you know, and so, you know, I think it's a transition and we'll get there, but, you know, time will take its course.
Dwar is 100% correct. Time will tell. All right. Well, that's the end of part one. I want to invite you to join us for part number two, where we continue the geek out about why tech implementations fail and really whose fault is it? Because it is a two-way street. Thank you all for listening to this episode of The Real Podcast. I want to give a shout out to Lead Pops, who is the sponsor of The Real Podcast, along with our other podcast partners of Next Level Loan Officers, of course, Lender Price, and our family over at Victorian Finance. Take care.